Welcome to Buffy Boyfriends. We're boyfriends watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I am the Slayer superfan, Sam.
And I am the first time watcher, Mike.
Wow, we landed on it.
Yeah.
We got it.
It's there.
The intro is introing. We're here together.
This is our first draft, and it's our final draft.
That's what people say you should do. Just write something. I feel like whenever I would have to do a rough draft for, like, school, I would never change anything for the final draft.
And I've carried that into my work life, too. I feel like a lot of the concepts that make it into the first draft of something, I never want to work on it again.
Yeah, it's like, believe you me, I did a good job the first time.
Yeah, sometimes when you overthink a concept, you move past the best idea that you had first.
Like, in refining it, you think you go, you fix it too much?
Yeah, don't I think so. Yeah, I think you just need to leave something sort of unfinished in its rough draft, first draft form.
The pursuit of perfection ruins greatness, or whatever people say.
That's how I live my life.
That's the leading concept of this podcast.
Yeah, it's gotten me here.
Not pursuing perfection has led us to watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer on a podcast.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
And I think the episode backs me up.
Yeah, they definitely didn't pursue perfection with this one.
No, this was a first draft, and I had it. So much fun.
Right.
Like, I was laughing every minute.
There was no need for perfection when they had this greatness. What are their names? Dean Vitale and Rob Day Hotel really figured that one out.
I'd watch more of their stuff.
We have the okay. Yeah, we're sort of sidelining into one of the other segments of the show. But before we get there, Mike, what's going on? What have you been up to since last time we recorded?
When did we last recorded? A week ago. We're back on a regular recording schedule, mm-hmm. So I don't have to play the game in my head of, like, when is this episode going to release and what is relevant to talk about in my life.
Oscars tomorrow.
Yeah.
To date the episode.
Oscars tomorrow, daylight savings time.
Do you have any predictions that could make you look like you have egg on your face? Not that, because this will come out post-Oscars, so are you going to stand on anything?
Egg on face. I mean, I feel like the big discussion point is, like, Kate or Michelle, who's going to win? Mm-hmm. I'm pulling for Michelle Yeoh. I need to clarify that here because there's two Michelles up. But I do think Kate's going to win Best Actress. I'm putting it out there now.
Wow.
I don't want it to be that, but that's what I'm saying.
It's a bold prediction, and I definitely, for me, would give it to Kate. I do think the narrative is with Michelle, and I think that if she wins, it's deserving too.
Yeah. Although there is precedent in Academy Award history for people tying for an Oscar and they both win the Oscar.
Really?
And this has happened in the Best Actress category.
6 times, according to no one else in the room yet.
So, I mean, in my head, Kate and Michelle are going to tie and they're both going to get Best Actress.
I would love that. That's that when Glenn Close and Lady Gaga were campaigning for the same award and someone made that mix that was Just Dance, but instead of the words Just Dance, it was someone saying Glenn Close.
And it's kind of like when Lux and Lucy both won last night on Drag Race. Rather than, they both wanted to win and they had to tie. They had to settle for a tie.
They pursued for the perfection of a maxi challenge win.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions for tomorrow?
I'm Spielberg sweep all day, baby.
Wow. Are you gonna have your new hat?
Of course. A friend of the pod and producer of the pod, Alex Conte, got me a hat that says The Fable Stan, and I do stand in that. I own that. I love that film.
Yeah, I hope you have a good night tomorrow.
I hope Steve is feeling good and that he's hearing my kind words to him. But otherwise for me, not too much going on. Doing improv all day, every day.
Great. It's just sort of like this podcast. You're kind of improving.
Oh yeah, I
never pod.
At the start of the sentence, I never know where it's gonna go, and then it ends.
Same. This is like practice. So once this podcast ends in 2.5 years, I'm gonna audition for a house team. That's
really
the terms, right?
Yeah, that's definitely really absorbing the terminology. Oh yeah,
I'm gonna herald.
I did explain the structure of a herald after he asked what it was. I did not force the knowledge on him. I didn't intend to burden him with the knowledge of the 3 beats and the group games and I even explained how to do a pattern game. Really got into the minutia of the herald. But Mike asked.
I did. And next week I'm going to see you at your class show. And true. It's going to just all look so familiar to me. I'm gonna be like, this is like a podcast episode.
You really get it. Okay. But we're here today to talk about The Dark Age, season 2, episode 8 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. If we go through the rest of this in 2.5 years, I'll be surprised.
Oh wait, I guess I didn't do the math right.
I mean, no, it's kind of close. But if we're gonna, we'll talk about it. But anyway, as I referenced earlier, this was written by Dean Battali and Rob Dayhotel, who we have seen episodes written by them before, and there have been good episodes. They wrote Never Kill a Boy on the First Date and The Puppet Show.
Two good episodes.
Two really good season 1 episodes.
Yeah.
They kind of don't miss yet. Three for three.
Not yet. I'm willing to give them another shot at Buffy.
Yeah. I would hire them to write another episode based off of the work we've seen so far.
True.
And it was directed by Bruce Seth Green, which at this point, I feel like he's directed at least half of the episodes. They love working with this guy.
Yes, but the thing is, I'll never remember the order of his name. Is it Bruce Seth Green? Is it Seth Bruce Green?
It's Bruce Seth Green.
Yeah.
And
Seth Green is also on the show.
Yes. And so far, I think Bruce Seth Green has directed both of the episodes Seth Green has appeared on.
Wow. Kind of like the square and the rectangle. Like, Seth Green appear... If Seth Green's on the show, Bruce Seth Green is directing.
Right.
But it doesn't go the other way.
Right.
The transitive property does not exist between these two.
Yes. Square, rectangle, dog, dash hunt kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, what's the dog dash hunt thing?
Like, all dash hunts are dogs, but not all dogs are dash hunts.
Oh, got it. But you could do that with any dog, right?
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. I'm not a dog person, so I don't travel in dog metaphor.
Okay, but it's clear what I'm saying.
I get it now, but I just didn't know that was a thing. Like, I feel like the square rectangle is known in culture.
Sure.
As an example.
I feel like when I learned about this kind of thing in like the third grade, we used dogs as a concept.
Oh, well, I don't listen when dogs are brought up.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you're a cat person, but cats don't really have like a...
Cats have breeds, but nobody knows what they are. And if you do, I don't want to hear it.
Okay. Well, then we'll move on. We are not alone. And this is the first time we're recording with a guest in person in a very long time, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Which is too bad. I feel, when I started the podcast, I was like, it'll be so fun. We'll have people over all the time. We'll watch the episode with them, and then we'll record right after. This is the first time that's really happened. We've recorded in person with people. Well, we did it with Joe and Conte that one time, too. But... anyway, it's a rainy day outside. It's an episode about Ethan Rain. And so we had to have one of our greatest friends who's into Buffy on the pod. It's Matt Rain.
Oh, hello.
Matt, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry I did the John Mulaney, Nick Kroll bit as the first words as my guest appearance.
Oh, you said, oh, hello.
I think I said it in the same cadence, too. I panicked.
Too much tuna, etc.
Too much tuna. Oh no,
Matt. What's going on? How are you?
I'm good. I'm the first person in how long to be here in person to record?
It's been a while.
We definitely haven't done a season 2 episode in person with someone. And the several episodes prior to that in season 1 were all over Zoom too. Like, I feel like the last time we were in person with someone was Joe and Conti for The Pack.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Unless I'm I apologize if I'm misremembering anyone.
You can call the law offices.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy to be here. It did rain, though. But you know what? Like you said, this episode had Ethan Rain.
Yeah.
It rained outside. So, ergo.
You're Matt Rain.
Mathematically, I have to be in person for this.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for making the trek. This was so great.
Thank you for having
me. Matt, what's going on? Talk to us. How are you? What's new?
I'm doing all right. Work's been a little crazy, and I won't reveal what I do, but I had to do a lot of stuff this week regarding the Oscars. And to answer your question...
Voter fraud? Voter fraud?
Oh, yeah, are you stuffing the ballot boxes for us?
Yeah, I'm stuffing it. I'm making sure Sam gets that Fableman sweep.
If every award went to a Steven Spielberg or an actor from a Steven Spielberg project,
it's because of me.
I think the Oscars would have some problems on their hands.
Well, Kante told me about the hat she made for you, so I thought, you know what would be even better than that hat?
You definitely skyrocket to the top of my birthday gift giving rankings.
Not to circle back, not to keep talking about the Oscars, but I just want to say, would love a tie for best actress. Right. Oh my God.
Between who?
For Michelle Yeoh and Cate Blanchett, personally.
Just had to check.
I also don't mind if either of them win. I don't think it was the best of the best picture, but it was one of my favorites. I did love Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah. And I kind of would love the idea that like a small budget, weird sci-fi comedy drama just wins inexplicably everything at the Oscars. But at the same time, I wouldn't hate it if the Fabelmans win. I did get tar-pilled recently, so I also wouldn't hate some wins for that movie.
Those are my top three.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be so thrilled if any of those movies win. And of those three, it does feel like Everything Everywhere All at Once is the winner.
Yeah.
Well, it's won most of the Guild Awards, right? Like, it won the Producers Guild, the Directors Guild. It won big at the SAG Awards. And I mean, obviously that doesn't mean one and one. But it's usually the same people who are voting for those awards are also voters in the Academy.
What do they call it? Like the weather vane? Or what do they say?
Yeah, the prognosticator. Yes. Like they see who's winning at which of these awards. Mm-hmm.
I used to do that a lot in high school. I was very into the Oscars, and I was following everything. Every award, and eventually I saw the pattern. I'm like, okay, you could win a Golden Globe, but that doesn't really mean much in the long game.
Yeah, we're gonna see what happens. When Ana de Armas wins for Blonde tomorrow night,
that'll be a shock. Who hooligans will be thrilled?
Maybe I'll finally finish Blonde.
You didn't finish it?
No.
Oh,
I also didn't.
I haven't watched a single second of it. But
I watched 30 minutes on my phone in a hotel in Italy, and I just could not keep going.
I think that was the way the filmmakers meant everyone to watch Blonde.
on your phone.
But
in Italy, in a hotel.
I did see the clip of her baby talking to her.
Yes. Baby talking.
I hope that's her clip. Wow, what is going to be the clip from Blonde they play?
Maybe it's something you haven't even seen yet.
I feel like sometimes when they do show clips during the award shows, it's like underwhelming clips. And like, I don't.
It's
mean,
always
like,
so a weird choice.
Yeah, and like, there's, and yeah, they're not going to play anything where probably people swear or anything like that. But like, there's also usually so many better scenes you can pick from.
I just saw it. I was looking for something else, and I searched my username and a word to find a different tweet of mine. But I found a tweet of mine from a different award show where they were like playing. It was like showing clips for best screenplay, but like none of the clips had words in them. Like none of them had lines of dialogue, and it's like, shouldn't we be like hearing something that people are saying? Obviously, there's more to a screenplay than the dialogue, but dialogue's a pretty sizable portion of a screenplay.
So I remember one year when they used to show you part of the screenplay, and then they highlight what's being, you hear the audio, yeah. But then the scene would just be like, I'll have a coffee, please. Milk or sugar? Just black, actually. And then that's all they show. And it was for like, I don't know, the Fablemans.
Hey, I did that just this morning. Ordered coffee with no milk or sugar.
I'm drinking it right now.
Could I be a screenplay writer?
Write that down. Also, you don't need to do another draft. Just write that down.
Save the cat. That's not a screenplay.
Classic screenwriting.
Anyway, we're here with Talking Buffy. Matt, talk to us about Buffy for you. How are we here today with you in this Buffy podcast? How did you get here? Not on the L train, but you know, in life, Buffy-wise.
Well, I'm sure I won't truly know the answer until I'm much older in life, and I fondly look back on all of this. But the first time I ever watched Buffy, when I was like in middle school and high school, the network FX always played Buffy after school. And so every time I went home, instead of immediately doing my homework or texting someone like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Or who's hanging out tonight or anything? I would turn the TV on and I would always put on FX because they always just played. They played reruns of things like King of the Hill and like other comedies and some action things. But they would always play Buffy at like 4. And I always ended up watching it, even though the episodes would be in completely out of order. Which, at the time, I don't know why, I didn't know too much about Buffy, but I thought it was like one of those, like, I thought it was, and it kind of was a little bit, like, at some parts where it's like a monster of the week. But there's obviously way more to it than that, and I didn't realize that. Although, it should have made a lot more sense when I was watching episode B, like, and that character showed up again. Who's this angel guy? But then, when I was in college, my brother started watching it. We either borrowed the DVDs from someone, or we used to, on Black Friday, go to Best Buy, and we would just find a TV show, and whatever was, like, the cheapest DVD set. We were like, okay, I've never seen this show before. I just bought the complete series for $10. Now's the time to watch. And I think he did that for, like, a few seasons of Buffy, and he started watching it, and he started texting me and said, like, hey, you should really... I'm like, oh, I've seen episodes of Buffy. I'm like, no, you should really watch from the beginning. It's pretty good. And so then I started watching with him and our childhood friend, Scott. And
Childhood friend Scott. I was thinking of adult friend Scott.
No, yeah, that's the thing. I actually know three different Scotts.
From three different phases of your life?
Yes.
Have they met?
Yes, they did. And we got a picture
all
of
three?
Them. All it's three like of
that,
them met.
Is it like that Spider-Man meme?
They were all pointing at each other. Except there's just one extra Spider-Man. But this is childhood friend Scott, who is now, before colloquially it was known as Buffalo Scott, but now he lives in Chicago, so he is Chicago Scott. Mm. There's a lot of Scotts. More common name than you'd think.
Yeah, I don't think I really know any Scotts besides the ones you know.
I used to, yeah, I mean, I know Scott Lamico, obviously.
Yes.
But, and I've met other Scotts, certainly, but I wouldn't say that I know them, you know, as a man.
Well, you know, no one ever truly knows a Scott.
Except other Scots, that's why
I feel like out of context, it sounds like I'm talking about Scottish people.
The fans.
Yes.
Okay, but, I feel like we're really of the age, pretty much everybody who comes on this podcast is like, yeah, I had the entire DVD box set, and I watched it that way.
Well, I think it started that way. We only had a few seasons or something. I'm trying to remember the details of this, because this was a while ago, but, because I remember we watched the rest of it using someone else's DVDs.
Hmm.
So it was one of the things where we had to keep borrowing them, and we were like, no, I gotta know what happens. But once we started watching, we got really obsessed, and to the point where we were like, why were we not watching this before? And I'm like, well, we were babies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, when this show came out, I was a 3-year-old. And I'm glad that I eventually watched it as a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I definitely think you have to be... Watching it as a teenager is kind of crucial, I think.
It's the reason I am the person I am today, for sure.
I wonder who I would be if I had watched Buffy as a teenager.
And I mean, we're already so similar, so... I think...
We would have merged.
Yeah, if we had touched them, if you had watched Buffy as a teenager, we'd turn into goop and become one person.
Sort of like the goop in this episode.
That's sort of why I said what I said.
Wow. You're kind of transitioning us on nicely.
I'm just referencing the episode that we watched.
I think it's because you're a pro.
I have a lot of podcasting experience. I think it's true. No, but yeah, Buffy slays. And this episode's so different. Like we were saying, like I didn't even really remember a lot of the specifics of this episode, but Mike, you're the first, you used to watch it for the first time. What were you thinking during this episode? What's going on?
This episode was just so fun. I enjoyed the zaniness. I felt like everyone was kind of like a little cracked having to like go into school on a Saturday. So everyone's personalities were just like turned up a notch a little bit. Yeah, it was a fun episode. We got to learn more about Giles, which has been seriously lacking on the show, I think. Yeah, fun episode. Loved it.
I agree. Really good. What was I going to say? Man, if you have something to say here, because I forgot.
I also liked the episode. I also didn't really remember much. I should say I haven't rewatched the series in a very long time. I think the last time I did a rewatch was shortly after college. And now I'm 80 years old, and I'm looking back fondly at all of this.
Yeah, I think it's been like 10 years since I watched also. Yeah. What I was going to say is I really like the villain of the episode. I know it wasn't actually Jenny, but it was Jenny's body anyway. And so like everybody involved in the plot line was a character we already knew. And like that had effects. I think that was really good, the way they did that.
Yeah, I thought that was very well done. Who's the actor that played Jenny?
Robia Lamorte.
Yes. Ooh. I thought she did a very good job on this episode. And, well, what else was I going to say about this? It's just interesting because, like, watching this, I was like, oh, right, this friggin' guy, Ethan Rain. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel bad that he shares your last name? I know it's spelled differently, but...
No, not at all.
You're kind of the Ethan Rain of alt comedy in New York.
How dare you? Yeah, I'm constantly coming up with schemes and trying to, at the expense of everyone else.
You get possessed for euphoric orgies.
I once did try to remove a tattoo using just straight up acid.
Yeah, and I do still have the burn marks.
Well, you know, I told you, look, there's an easy way to do this and there's a hard way to do this.
And then you poured the acid.
And then before you got to choose, I just poured the acid.
And I said, I guess we're doing the hard way.
That was the easy way.
Oh, I don't want to know about the hard way then. Yes, slay.
Slay.
No, I agree. Jenny's actress did a great job. I guess I should have looked into who did the voiceover for, or maybe they
that
pitched,
was her.
Maybe they pitched down her dialogue or something. But very just stunning to hear that kind of voice come out of her.
I think when they recorded that, they had her use the Scream voice changer for that.
Have you seen Scream 6?
No, I actually just saw Scream 5 because I hadn't seen it because I wanted to see it before seeing Scream 6. I truly forgot Scream 5 even came out.
Gotcha. Well, oh, actually, it's kind of a running plotline on this podcast because at the start of the podcast, my roommates and I were watching all of the Scream movies. Ooh. And now we're here. I've seen Scream 6. I won't spoil anything, but I really enjoyed it.
It was good. I heard it was fun.
I had a good time.
I am a big Scream fan, and I was a little bummed watching Scream 5 being like, oh, this isn't Wes or Kevin Williamson even, but... I don't know, I thought it was fun. There was some,
I was fine with Scream 5, but Scream 6 is really good.
No, that's a better way to put it. I was fine with Scream 5.
I know a lot of people hated it, and I'm just saying, it was the first time I had seen Scream, like, back in October, like, ever. And so I wasn't invested enough to hate Scream 5, but it was fine.
I think I already came in probably with low expectations, and everyone just kept saying this is so bad, and I was like, it was fine, it was there. I think it could have been worse.
And you've only seen Scream 1.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. But all of the trailers for Scream 6 do look really good. Like, anytime I go to the movie and they're playing the trailers before Nicole, Scream 6 always looked good. And Jenna Ortega is everywhere right now.
Yeah. I actually liked Jenna Ortega in the Scream 5. I thought she was one of the better
She's great. I didn't... When we watched Scream 5, I think it was before... Wednesday, so like she wasn't even on my radar as a person to like know who that is, so I didn't think about her that much. And then but now watching Scream 6, I was like, I think I get it now. I'm with Jenna Ortega now, and maybe I'll watch Wednesday. Wednesday is kind of like the modern day Buffy, is sort of like how people talk about it to me.
Whoa,
sort of like high school paranormal detective-y girl magic.
I said
paranormal.
The only thing I've heard about Wednesday as a review was that it was like Riverdale. That would you sense. Say, oh, I guess you've only seen the first episode?
And I think I only saw the first 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I only saw the first episode of Wednesday, and I was a little, like, underwhelmed? I don't know. I thought she was good, but I also thought, like, what is a show?
It's kind of the most popular show that's ever existed.
Yeah. Did you, so what is it?
I have no idea.
Did you read recently what Jenna Ortega said about Wednesday?
No.
About how she was... did not like the script, and sometimes on set she would be like, can I just please say something else? This is such a bad line. And so I think they did like change a lot of things while shooting, just like line changes. But she also said she still has not seen it.
And Queen.
Yeah, which I was like, she is a star. This is incredible. I love it.
Stars don't watch their own work.
But she's grateful for it because it's allowing her to get roles she didn't.
Of course.
Wasn't up for before. But at the same time, it kind of sounds like she's like, this show's like, I didn't think this was going to be a big thing, but all right.
And now she's going to do it.
And now she's stuck.
Eight more seasons of it.
Eight more seasons.
She needs a good lawyer. Yes.
I'm sure she's fine.
She's okay.
This episode was really heavy on the drug metaphor. Big on being like, Giles used to do demon drugs in the past.
You know, adults were kids once too,
Giles had a past. And he looked hot in the past.
He did. Yes. They showed that picture of him, and I was like, okay, maybe he should go back. I wish we got, like, an Oxford prequel series instead of an Angel spinoff.
Whoa. That could still be coming.
That could happen.
You're speaking it out. That's a first draft idea.
It's true.
I don't think you need to change anything else. Just go with that idea right now.
Yeah. I think they've covered it a bit more in the comics. But yeah, I wish we knew everything there was to know.
I was loving the backstory of like him and his demon friends, mm-hmm. like trying to call you've never watched or read the show The Magicians.
No.
Have you? Do you know that series? Franchise?
I've never seen it. I was aware of it.
Yeah. The very similar plot to something that happens in The Magicians. So it seems like all of these genre media empires just pull from each other. Yeah. Pull the same ideas. But I love that.
Well, Buffy was one of the, I think, initial standard bearer for this type of genre that everyone clearly, like a lot of people, took big inspiration from, and in some cases I think we just did the same thing. I haven't seen The Magicians. I'm not saying The Magicians was, but no, I'm just saying like there was clearly some inspiration.
The Magicians is more Harry Potter goes to grad school.
Yeah, it is good, but it is also very derivative.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with being derivative. That's
what my mom used to say to me.
That's how I approach all of my creative endeavors.
Deriving.
Yeah. But no, it was good. We got to learn more about Giles. I was going to say something else, but...
Well, we've heard in the past about how Giles's parents were hard on him and, like, forced him into this Watcher career. Mm. But now we're adding more flavor on that, where he's, like, he really hated it. Even, like, he talked about it a little bit in Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. These writers wrote that one, too. But now he's sort of, like, I dropped out. I was a fuck-up. Kind of like he was a rebellious dude.
Yeah, and then once he got a little taste of demon, he was like, this is a little too much for me. I'm gonna be responsible and be a watcher like I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, the Igon was kind of making fun of, like, when Jenny revealed herself to be possessed by the demon, she was like quoting him from back in the day where he was like, someone's gonna get hurt, blah blah blah. And then we found out in this episode he ultimately stopped doing it when his friend did actually die from getting exercised.
Sounds painful.
Me after a damn run.
Me after doing any exercise.
I feel like I wish that the woman who was in the first scene as the demon was the...
Deirdre.
I wish that she and the dude had swapped places, like... I felt like she was better. The guy who was playing the demon for, like, the middle part of the episode was just kind of nothing. But Deirdre was, like, sort of giving.
Yeah, she. I loved her outfit. We were just talking about the outfit stuff before we got on the recording. She had those fake pearls on. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
Call it out, fake.
No, harder.
I did. They got that. That came from the costume department, for sure.
Philip, the guy who becomes possessed after the...
Philip with one L.
I noticed that too. We were watching with the captions on, and so Philip with one L, so it popped me.
Damn, I've been called out.
You've been always, it's not been revealed. That's how you watch the show.
I'm fully on board the closed captioning.
Mike's a staunch captions user. I prefer not to have them on. In a drama, I'm okay with it, but I feel like in a show where, like, the delivery of the dialogue and, like, the comedic timing is important, I don't like to read ahead because I feel like it, like... Not ruins a joke.
No, I agree. I if I'm watching a comedy or a show where it's like pretty easy to hear what everyone's saying, I don't have captions on. But there are, and I think this is more indicative of modern day shows. There's a lot of dramas now where a lot of the just line readings and stuff is just more subdued or just like a little under your breath. You kind of have to put captions on sometimes for those shows. But I agree, for comedy or anything like that, the jokes are part of the experience. I don't want to get spoilers. I didn't mind it for Buffy, though, even though Buffy, I don't think, is a show I would normally have captions on for.
I also don't mind it because I'm an amazing boyfriend.
Wow.
Wow. Well,
thank you.
I'm not, so.
Thank you for calling me out.
I didn't call you out. I didn't even mention the captions. Well, I did.
Yeah, I
did
you
say,
did,
well,
you did, like, kind of slam me.
I didn't slam you. What do you mean? I'm not saying there's no moral failing for wanting to have the captains on, and I'm saying I'll watch them with them on when you're around.
Wow.
See, this is part of the dangers when your guest is in person.
There's so many things to reference together. We could talk about my roommates were here.
They were all lovely, by the way.
My bed isn't made. I'm looking at it right now.
I won't even turn around to look.
Let us know in the rating and reviewing what you feel about captains.
Yeah.
Whose side you're on.
Would love to hear if people are watching with captains on. Maybe you're listening to transcripts of this podcast rather than listening to it.
Do you ever do that thing where you're watching a show that's in another language, so obviously the captions have to be on, but like you're binging it, and then you get up, you leave the TV on, and you get up to get something because you're just in a mode where you're just so used to watching, you think you're going to understand what they're saying. I did that with the show Pachinko once on Apple TV Plus, very good show. But I did at one point just get up and turn around and be like, "Oh, wait a minute! I was looking at something else for 5 minutes. I have to go back."
I feel like anytime I'd watch like anime or like anything like that, I'm like, I'll just like scroll over to another browser, just like listening to the Japanese. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I have to go back.
Wait, what happened at all?
Yeah. My Hero Academia. Don't tell me. I think you would like that show.
What is it?
My Hero Academia. It's about a superhero high school.
That does sound good.
It's an anime. It's really, really good.
That's on my list.
I'm looking for new media to rip off of for my yeah. creative endeavors.
If you wanted to get derivative, I think that
My Hero Academia.
My Hero Academia.
That's what we're calling the story. And I don't want to hear anything from any lawyers.
Yeah, I was about to say working title, but it sounds like no, that's going to be the title.
No, that's the title. Jenna Ortega, I will use your legal advice.
I thought you were going to try to offer her a role.
She can be in it too. She doesn't have to watch it.
You know, I just remember watching Scream 5 and being like, wow, I wonder why this Wednesday show got super big. And then, kind of like what you said before, seeing Jenna Ortega do anything, I was like, all right, I get it.
She is really good in Scream 6. And I mean, I remember watching the Wednesday pilot while cooking dinner, so I wasn't super focused on it.
Wow. I think I was also a little distracted when I first watched the first Wednesday.
All the Wednesday heads out there, I promise I'll give it another go.
The wet heads.
This episode was all... I feel like most of the plot was about Jenny and Giles and sort of their relationship. Sort of they were going to fuck, and then now they're
never going to fuck.
Yeah.
But they did kiss. We got a first kiss.
Their first scene together was delightful. Jenny was, like, pretending like she had destroyed the book that Giles had lent her. And she was, like, obviously joking. And then she was like, let's stay in on Saturday night.
Honestly, yeah. That book gag she did, I thought that was a good rib. Giles, the big simp for books that Giles is.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a great little like chemistry test right out from the beginning of the episode.
She said that she loves watching him squirm, and then later he's like, I trust I gave good squirm, and then she's like, let's see if I can make you squirm.
Wow. Jenny, she's witty, that one.
She's not afraid to be sexy.
And she's not afraid of workplace romances either. She's
not even thinking about being afraid of workplace
When they kissed and the bell rang, yeah. I thought they were going to do the thing you always see where like, oh, saved by the bell, right. They're not going to kiss. But they straight up kiss right when the kids come out.
I know. And like, I've been in schools where two teachers are like married or like engaged or whatever. And it's like, okay, but we're all being very normal people and not kissing at work.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone kiss at work.
Have you ever worked anywhere where there was a workplace romance?
Actually, yes, but it was a similar situation like you described. If they never they never did anything... This is such a... Coupley? Is that the right word? They never did anything like that at work. Everyone knew. But they weren't like...
Open secret.
No, they told everyone, like, hey, we're dating now. And I'm like, okay. And then they just proceeded to never look at each other during work hours.
There was like a secret romance at my office where they would just like show up and leave together every single day at the exact same time. And then never disclosed anything. But I also worked at a summer camp where obviously every single person was dating someone else.
No, that's summer camp though. That's like, I think that's the one workplace where it's assumed that's what's going to happen.
But it is weird. Like Jenny and Giles are kind of like the most like romantic pairing of the show. Obviously, Buffy and Angel are, like, together. But even in this episode where Buffy and Angel were, like, both on screen, like, they didn't even have, like, a romantic tension moment in this episode, felt like.
No, they didn't have any scenes like that in this one.
And Giles and Jenny have been just, like, progressing. It's like they met, and now they have been dating, and now they're gonna have sex. But, like, they're not, actually. But, like, it's so much more, like, there's no school. Nobody at school is dating each other.
No.
No.
Other than Jenny and Giles, which is very bizarre, I feel like. It's like,
Cordelia is dating somebody. She's dating
other people.
She's dating that lead singer of the band.
Yeah, that's
true. I worry about her.
It seems like she's getting more involved in the group, which obviously we love.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think Cordelia can take care of herself.
Oh, yeah.
Some beautiful sounds out on Myrtle Avenue.
Is this where I can tell my story?
Mike, now, quick.
Yeah, go. But this, the last couple episodes, they've had one line every episode where Cordelia expresses, like, that she cares about somebody else in the main group. Like, her and Willow have had friendship moments, and her and Buffy had the whole thing at the frat in that episode. And now in this episode, she's like, I care about Giles, and, like, all that stuff. And so they're really wanting us to know that Cordelia cares, which I really love.
Low-key, when I first watched the show, not, like, just randomly out of order on FX, Cordelia was immediately one of my favorite characters on the show.
Oh, yeah. She's the best.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. I think the FX thing is, yeah, it's so weird when channels show reruns of other things. Like, at the gym, they always play Modern Family, but it'll be, like, one episode from season one, and then the rest of the hour is an episode from, like, season, like, eight. And it's like, why? Who is watching this like this?
Yeah.
Me, I guess, but...
I mean, doing that with a sitcom is one thing, like, an network sitcom, since ideally those are made that you can play them out of order. But a show like Buffy, to do it that way just seems kind of insane to me. How, like, it would be, like, I would turn on the TV, and there'd be an episode of Buffy from, like, season three. And then the next day, there'd be an episode from, like, the last season when... I won't
Don't
spoil
say anything.
Anything, but, like, it was very obvious it was the last season.
But, and it's just, like... Because even in this episode, that is, like, somewhat a Monster of the Week episode, we're still getting so much Giles backstory. Jenny and Giles' relationship has changed. Like, yeah. We're learning more about, like, Ethan. And, like, there's ongoing plots that are, like, continuing through this, like, random... demon.
Yeah, they're still following somewhat of a Monster of the Week format, but there's so much more going on where you definitely need to be watching every episode in order.
Yeah. This is the type of show that would benefit from one of those, like, 24-hour channels where they just, like,
yes.
Play the show from season one, episode one, to the last episode and just restart it.
Paramount Plus does that with Survivor, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice of them.
That might be a Pluto TV channel already. I don't
well,
know.
We'll have to look into Pluto. But, oh, well, I mean, not really related, but I read a book recently, The 2000s Made Me Gay, which is, like, essays on pop culture with a queer lens about stuff that came out in the 2000s. And I was like, it is good, but I can't recommend it to Mike because they spoil some big stuff that happens later in Buffy.
Ooh,
like, yeah. What?
I'm not going to say it, but now I feel like I'm a member of a SWAT team going through culture, clearing things to make sure that nothing's spoiling you.
Wow.
You're like the Oscar response team this year.
What is the Oscar? What does that mean?
Oh, they, like a month ago or something, they announced that there was a response unit at the Oscars. Because of the slap incident, they're on hand to make sure nothing goes crazy. And I'm just picturing people dressed in SWAT gear waiting off to the side, being like, just looking at eyeballing celebrities, be like, don't do it.
I hope they have, like, golden armor.
They should look
like gigantic
swords. They should look like big Oscars.
Yeah.
They come in and pick you up. I think also if, like, you go over your speech now, these people come and take you away.
Men on stilts.
They'll sound like Billy Crystal. I don't know.
The Oscar security team voiced by Billy Crystal. I love it.
Who's hosting this year? Is there a host?
Jimmy Kimmel.
It's like, who cares? How many times has this man done this?
I'm surprised he did it even once. The fact that he keeps showing up every now and then.
Where's Buffy?
Right.
Why isn't Buffy host?
I am ready for Sarah Michelle Gellar's renaissance. I've been staunchly waiting for years, and she is on the new show, The Wolf Pack, which I've not really dived into. But I did watch her on Do Revenge.
Wow.
Oh,
so
I
she has been
that.
In a movie. She mm-hmm. could host an Oscar ceremony.
Yeah. If what if her and Camila Mendes hosted together?
That'd be fun. It'd be, at the very least, it can't be any worse than Jimmy Kimmel hosting again.
Right. So, Sarah Michelle, Camila, they, you know, there's new things to say.
Yeah.
What's Jimmy Kimmel going to say? Watch my live show?
Could also serve as a passing of the torch. I don't know.
I'd love that. This episode, we saw Willow get more into, like, the watchery stuff. She's kind of like...
Yeah.
She had the whole research thing, and they even gave her a cup of tea, sort of, like, in case we didn't get it.
I loved that cup she was drinking.
It was a great cup. You can tell that Giles has a lot of great things. Sorry.
No, I don't... I'm just making... Sorry.
You can tell he curates his life. He goes to thrift stores. He's perusing. He's not impulse buying. He's only pulling things that spark joy in his life.
I do think this is the first time we've seen Giles' house. Yeah. And I apologize if I'm getting that incorrect. But we got so much of Giles' house. We saw every room. They really used the house set in this episode.
I mean, we were all pointing out about the lamps alone that he has in his house. Giles has incredible.
Like three very noticeable lamps.
And they're all great.
They are. They're like green stained glass.
Do you think he shipped them over from England? Or do you think do you think Sunnydale has a thrift store?
I do think there's like a watcher registry of things you can buy.
After 5 years, you get a lamp. After.
Yes.
Maybe he got it from Joyce's gallery.
Oh,
interesting. Yeah, where's Joyce? We have not seen Joyce this season, have we?
I mean, I think we've seen her, but she hasn't really been a big feature.
What was the last episode in season two before this one that Joyce showed up?
She was when Spike attacked the school.
That was a big one.
She was there. But that was, like, I feel like that's the only time we've seen her.
It could be.
And I'm going to... That's
I don't
my first draft. Because
even we even saw them get ready at home for Halloween, and I don't think she was in those scenes either.
No,
probably at the gallery.
She's always at the gallery.
She's a single working mother.
Yeah, miss her. Hope she comes back.
Yeah, well, maybe next episode
when she's done moving all that stuff into Giles's apartment.
Just box it up really nice with the packing peanuts.
Gotta have the packing peanuts.
No Spike in this episode.
No Spike, no Drusilla, no vampire. Or no, that's not true.
Yeah.
Because there were the vampires who went to the hospital to get for blood delivery day.
Yeah.
And that was just like one scene, and then they said no more vampires this episode.
And like you said, even though like Angel is in this, his interactions are kind of minimal, but also like nothing like major, especially interactions with Buffy. There's no like they don't play up any of the tension or anything. He kind of just shows up like, all right, where do I need to be?
Yeah, and then, like, I do feel like Angel was just used as, you're the plot point this episode.
Yeah.
We need you to solve the monster, and that's all we're giving you. You're going to show up at the end. You're going to have some weird makeup on your face. And then we're moving on.
We need to put you in. The blood scene had to have just been there because they need to introduce Angel earlier in the episode so that he doesn't just show up at the end of the episode. But I did love that blood donation scene. It was very funny. Like, Buffy's like, how did you know about this? And Angel's like, it's blood delivery day. Everybody knows about this.
One of my favorite things about Buffy when I first watched was the weird kind of small underworld of organized demon crime.
Yes.
Which I was like, this is great. This is a lot of fun. I won't spoil it, but there's one episode that has maybe one of my favorite small side characters of all time. It's in an episode of Buffy. It's so stupid. But to the point where, like, I almost made a shirt with this character on. I'll tell Sam later.
Okay, whoa. Great. Wow, I'm excited. I don't know this about you. Who is there? Anything else? Xander was very minimal in this episode, which was fun.
Yeah, he was there.
Could be worse.
I have a feeling it's gonna be worse going forward. I feel like we're heading into stormier waters in the Xander season two plot.
How so?
I see, like, they keep putting him and Cordelia in scenes together where they're like, look at these two. They're like, they're opposites. They hate each other. But then, ooh, they're hugging in the scene. And Xander's like protecting her from when Philip like broke out of the library cage. He was like, I gotta protect Cordelia. So I think they're gonna put these two together in like some sort of like one episode, like, odd couple arc where they're like, should we date? And then I'm not going to like that episode. And I need to start preparing myself now because I see it happening.
They did have a moment that would count as one of the scenes for that kind of story when they were at a small little tiff while studying. Yes. Again, another one of my favorite things about Buffy, the studying.
They're always in that damn library. Oh yeah, but there was that scene where Cordelia and Xander almost like hit each other.
Yeah.
And they're like, you want to go? And
Cordelia's like, I've seen you fight. You're not that strong.
And I mean, we saw it earlier in the episode. Cordelia was able to... Cordelia kicked Phillip. Xander didn't do a damn thing.
That was the best. That was one of my favorite parts of the episode.
Ethan. Yeah, because he was there too.
Yeah. I feel like this is the first time in a long time we've seen someone trapped in the library cage.
Yeah, haven't seen the library cage in quite a while.
Love that library.
Didn't seem very strong.
He busted
this
out of it so easily.
It seems like each episode...
I don't think they locked it.
No, the library cage is just as strong as the script needs it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, he didn't even really kick the door to open it. It didn't even look like it was, like, swung open. It just seemed like it was already open. I don't know.
It didn't, like, break or anything.
They're teens. What are you going to do?
They forgot to lock it. They were too busy.
I told you to check the gas tank.
The library seemed very fragile in this episode, because Ethan, like, knocked over an entire bookcase with, like, his pinky.
That scene was so weird. Buffy, like, goes into the stacks, and she saw a shadow move or whatever, and so she's back there. The stacks are so big. Buffy went through, like, 8 different hallways.
I was at the same library.
And then Ethan's plan is to, like... He, like, lightly pushes a bookcase over and then, like, tries to run away. And then Buffy is just like, hey, just don't. she, like, dodges the bookcase and then, like, stops him and punches him. And he's like, okay, fine, I'm here.
what did he think was going to happen? She's the Slayer. That's not going to stop.
Maybe he didn't know.
But he got the best of her quite a few times this episode.
That's true.
Buffy didn't really... do much to stop Ethan. I'm gonna say it.
True, and he got away again. He's still out there somewhere.
Yeah, I think Buffy was just so worried about Giles most of the episode. Mm. Ethan took advantage of it, clearly.
Lots of taking advantage in this episode. But Giles is like, it wouldn't be right to have sex with you right now, Jenny, if you're taking advantage of her, like, recently being knocked out, I guess.
Yeah, and Jenny, as demon, wanted to be taken advantage of, or whatever Joss Whedon's little fantasy was.
Oh boy.
I mean, it would be extremely, extremely bad. The demon was possessing her.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad they didn't have sex.
Yeah, I'm glad ultimately that's not the direction they went in.
Same. It's so weird. Like, there's so many moral quandaries in this episode that are kind of brushed over, or like the darkness of Giles' past is people are like, wow, he used to be bad, but then they're like, Giles was drinking, and they're like, they think about it, that like all of them have this like major response to like Giles like having some scotch or whatever, which just was very funny, the seriousness with which Buffy says that he was drinking, like, is so funny to me, because like they constantly are like killing people, and then they're like, he was drinking.
They're saying some of the most horrific things
anyone
would ever see. They're fighting demons, for Christ's sake. Not for Christ, but that'd be a really that would be a really weird undertone of the show if that's something you just started to notice. but at the same time, they're just completely shocked that Giles is like, well, I'm flirting a little with an adult.
This episode, it's not, I mean, I feel like this is the first time, well, Buffy and Cordelia had like some drinking at the frat house, but they weren't like looking down on that. I mean, it was a party, and the big thing in this episode was that Giles was drinking alone rather than like being out at a party, I guess.
On a Friday night, like, I don't know, I feel like Giles is well within his rights to have a drink after a long work week.
To me, it read more as like them being like, this seems unusual of Giles than anything else. But also, I don't know. I guess also they are teenagers. And it would, again, one of the
things. But Jenny was there too. She was like,
Was it Jenny or Jenny as demon at that point?
It was just Jenny.
Okay.
Giles, I thought we agreed. You don't have sex.
Not till Jenny says she can.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like you said earlier, though, it just touched upon them being like, oh, I guess Giles maybe is an adult, is a person, yes. is not just a librarian watcher.
Major theme over the last two episodes, I guess, like both of these previous, this episode and the one before it, have ended with Buffy and Giles having this like conversation, and in this episode Buffy even references the previous conversation, kind of. She's like, I'm not gonna lie to you, that kind of thing. And the last episode was all about Giles like lying to her because she's like a kid and she wants to be treated like a kid. And now she's like, well, I saw you for the first time as a person and not just as an adult. And I feel like that's been their arc recently, about like coming together and seeing each other and like recognizing the humanity within one another.
Also, I do think a very small running theme that you see every now and then in the show is that, oh, Giles is hot, actually.
Yeah. he was putting on the moves this episode.
We talked about Giles being hot in the past in that picture with the guitar, but he's hot in this episode just as an adult man.
Yeah.
Oh, just you wait.
And I definitely don't think I recognized that when I was watching this as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old. I was
being on the Xander train.
I was on the David Boreanaz train. Okay, he has that horrible back tattoo, and that's all I need in a man.
I was very much on the Cordelia train.
Oh, she looked incredible in this episode.
Yes,
she was.
Her
serving.
Hair looked amazing. Her shirt was amazing. Her pants were amazing. Her shoes were amazing.
She's finally making that haircut they gave her work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she's kit and she's crushing every scene.
Well, there's no question about that ever. Chris McCarpenter, one of our most talented actresses.
Oh yeah, and honestly, should be currently up at the Oscars.
Yeah, maybe Charisma and Sarah could team up.
That would
host
be...
the Oscars.
Yeah, they could host the Oscars.
That would be great. I would watch.
I would watch.
And I'm gonna watch no matter what, but I would tune in early for that.
I would. Yeah, maybe they should do the red carpet hosting and then, and then do the actual hosting.
That's
also
a long work day.
I know, but if two women could do it, it's not.
True. It is a lot of copy, though, to read. We're
just constantly on the teleprompter. Really.
All right, we have 30 seconds.
A running theme of this episode was calisthenics.
Yeah. Big in the 90s.
Started off the episode. And they kind of, they, I mean, Giles was like, it's not music, it's noise, which is all about Freaky Friday. Jamie Lee. All of us.
To be fair, Buffy was listening to music from The Matrix while working out.
Also, that like opening cut at the beginning of the episode when the Philip and Deirdre are like walking through the high school looking for Giles in the middle of the night, and then they cut to like Buffy doing her workout. I thought that was just like the next day, and we're like, ooh.
You know, at first I thought that too.
Yeah, but then they cut back outside of the hot library. So Buffy is just doing her calisthenics at midnight at the library.
It was
with
way,
Giles and the janitor.
It was way too dark for the scene to be like, right, like that was not when they wanted it to be set.
It was pitch black out. It was like, that looked like it was 3 a.m.
Matt, do you have any tattoos? This episode, we got some tattoos.
No, I don't. And part of the reason I don't have tattoos is because of something that happens.
You're afraid of the demon possessing you?
No, I just know that if I had a tattoo, I would regret it, so I'd have to buy acid and pour it on me to get it, to remove it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't have any tattoos either.
I know.
Yeah, but you didn't ask.
Sorry. Sam, and I do.
Oh, what tattoos do you have, Sam?
I got one right here.
Oh, I've seen this before, yes.
It's like a person laying down, covering their face. And I have one on my foot. I guess I could easily show you that one, too.
Oh, I didn't know about this one on the foot. Oh, nice.
For the listeners at home, Sam just showed us his two tattoos.
So true.
That, one of the benefits of being an IRL guest.
I mean, I could show you over Zoom, too, but it wouldn't be as high quality.
It'd be awkward, too. You'd have to angle the camera.
And the one on my foot is the coordinates of my aforementioned summer camp, where the staff members were dating each other.
Wow.
Wow. Miss Calendar was at that camp.
Me and Jenny go way back. I do feel like they made him... I feel like I wish they had introduced someone who knew Giles in the past who wasn't Ethan in this episode, who stayed alive. Like, if they're going to expand out this backstory, I feel like we need more characters. But, like, now it's just Giles and Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
Giles crossed out all the names on that list other than him and Ethan. And so I wish we... Deirdre should have, like, been, like, a character that has died.
Yeah, I feel like that was a missed opportunity.
Because he didn't even talk to Philip either.
No. And I wonder if part of the reason is because, and it's something I've noticed on older network drama shows, is I feel like sometimes they try to really spread out information and not try to reveal everything in one because they have, what, 22 episodes mm-hmm. to get through. I don't know if that was, you know, a factor going into this, but it felt like one of those notes where it's like, well, if we reveal everything now, then we got to come up with something else for other episodes to fill in later. But at the same time, I kind of do wish we had something to be like, oh, well, let me explain. We go way back. We did this and that. And
to me, I feel like it's more, like, my idea of why that happened is probably because, like, they already had, like, Giles is just one character, and he has two side characters that are, like, part of his orbit now with Jenny and Ethan. Mm-hmm. And, like, none of the other characters even have people like that. All of, like, Buffy only interacts with the leads, and yeah. same with, like, Willow, Xander, and Cordelia, and Angel. Like, I guess they talk to Spike and Drew, but that's kind of the villains of, like, the whole season.
Right.
But maybe they just don't want to build out Giles' world too much because he's just kind of, like, one of the characters.
I could see that being that as well. Either way, it's a big missed opportunity, though. And I wanted to learn more.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the last Giles episode where Ethan was introduced, I did make the bold prediction we would never see this guy again. Because I'm going to be honest, he didn't really make that much of an impression on me in the Halloween episode. He was just kind of a random guy who knew Giles and then left.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed him in this episode. I thought he brought, like, a fun kind of chaotic energy. He was... Buffy, like, cornered him and asked him, like, why would you sell us all of those, like, costumes and, like, make us go crazy in the last episode? He was like, I don't really have a plan. Like, I just wanted to do that.
It's chaos magic.
And that was fun. And I thought that, I think he and Giles have good, like, acting chemistry against each other.
Seem like good foils.
Yeah. So I'm glad Ethan got away, and I'm looking forward to seeing them interact again.
I'm with you. Like, Ethan didn't have a good opportunity to be fun in the Halloween episode because when Ethan and Giles are in a scene together, they are like, we hate each other, and that's, like, all they can say. But Ethan and, like, Buffy have, like, fun chemistry where he's just like, he's just like this guy who can sometimes do magic, and then other people are just, like, interacting with him who don't know him, and so he has
this
more
guy
fun.
Tried to throw a friggin' bookshelf over me.
And the watchers, I guess we don't know that he is a watcher, but he's got great taste in, things to have around his house, too. Because he had that, well, I guess in his store, we don't see his house, but he had the pink elephant in the last episode. He's got all of these, like, Roman statues around his, like, empty store now.
Really,
like,
detailed mannequins.
Yeah.
I loved his justification. He was like, Giles told me to leave, but I didn't leave town. The store's paid through the end of the month, so I'm still here.
Okay.
Getting out of those leases sometimes can be a real pain.
Yeah. He's a working class hero.
He's got to do something. Halloween ended, so he can't keep running the costume shop.
Yeah.
What do you think he's going to turn that store into?
Clothing store. Oh. He's got all the mannequins. What if there was a Froyo store where there are all those mannequins? Like, the people just, like, holding fake Froyo? Like, I really enjoy that.
I would love it. I would love for that to scare customers away. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could make a new bronze.
Competing nightclub.
When I was young, when we were watching the show, my brother and I were like, I want to go to the bronze so bad.
Got to get a coffee at 10 p.m.
Yes. I was like, what is this place? You just go there to get coffee? You go there to go crazy? I love this.
As a first-time viewer, would you rather go to the bronze with Buffy or the library with Buffy?
Ooh. I mean, I'm a library girl. I want to go to the library. I got to walk around those stacks.
Sit at the singular table.
Yeah, have a nice cup of tea at the library, and then we'll go to the Bronze after.
Love that.
That's a good plan. That's a good Saturday.
Figure out the demon who's attacking the city and then party it out.
Yeah, I'll be there for computer class Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. Then we'll go to the library and then we'll go to the Bronze.
And then we'll fuck Giles.
Whoa.
Now that's...
That's a Saturday.
That's a Saturday.
It's Saturday right now.
What are we doing?
Wait, hold on. In this scenario, are you a student? Or...
I am the adult TA for Jenny's computer class.
Okay.
And I'm a watcher in training.
And okay, now that
good.
Jenny's
well, that's still not good. Still Giles is my boss.
One issue.
But they don't mind workplace romances in this universe.
No, it could work.
It's the 90s.
I mean, I'm sure there might be a little bit more of a power dynamic TA and the teacher, but
and that works for me.
Okay.
But it does seem like Giles is not okay with imbalanced power dynamics.
No, so not in the slightest.
I don't know that we would be able to convince him.
I'm quitting then.
You only took this job right,
to get closer to him. And so now that I find that it's the one thing holding me back, I'm out.
That's why he can't ever find a permanent person to be in that position. Once people find out, they're like, I'm gone.
Do you want to meet up after class?
Do you want to go to the Bronze?
Do you think Giles has ever been to the Bronze? Has he?
He has.
Yes.
In the first episode.
Yeah, but he would like to fight vampires. Yeah. He didn't go to hang out.
Oh, no. He would never be in that din.
You know, I could be wrong, but I think there's an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where it's like a random... This is maybe one of the only thing I remember from watching.
I've seen show. Four seasons of that show, and I remember like three things.
How is that possible? You just don't remember anything of the show that I would watch for like several years. But there is an episode where... they do go to this secret hangout place, and I was like, that looks like the Bronze. And I did research. It was the same set. It was the Bronze.
I love that.
And they're it was the same layout on purpose. And I was like, this is the only thing I'm going to remember probably from the show.
Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a Whedon project.
Yes.
Show run by his brother and created by Joss Whedon. So,
they have the same sets.
Probably, yeah. They use the same set in Angel, the same set in Firefly, Dollhouse, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's Joss Whedon's house.
Much Ado About Nothing.
Honestly,
and
I would love if the one thread in all Dr. those...
Dr. Horrible, Single Abroad. This is naming every Joss Whedon project I can think of.
Did you say Dollhouse?
I did.
Okay. I would love if the one running thread for all those shows was that the Bronze exists in all of them.
That would be... That would
the Bronze is the nexus for all of the different universes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's where, like, all these different multiverses, they all meet up. The epicenter is the Bronze.
Cabin in the Woods.
Justice League.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he did that, too. Sort of the beginning of the end. Yes. And the Avengers, sorry. Okay, we'll be done now. Does anybody have any other thoughts on the episode before we sort of progress?
Yeah, there was something. I'm trying to see if I can remember. But we did cover a lot of ground.
So true. I like this episode as a light parallel to Buffy and Angel. Like, Jenny finds out about Giles' dark past, and like that causes complications on their relationship, which is kind of a similar thing that Buffy and Angel are going through.
But in slightly different kind of settings, the fact that they're adults and they also work with each other.
Yeah, and there was like more... It's different because Buffy like has to be a part of this dangerous world, and so she's a little more used to it. But when Jenny goes through this like very traumatic experience, she pulls back even further than Buffy has pulled back based on what she's discovered about Angel's past.
Oh, you know, one thing I did like, it's not poignant at all, but... Love the little scene in the morgue where some guy is only just checking to make sure the bodies are there.
Yeah, he opens up this like the all of the metallic doors and then like writes something on a piece of paper and then closes it again.
Which you pointed out makes sense to do that. Mike pointed out, sorry. So Mike, I'm so sorry. Let's re-edit this. When Mike pointed out, that probably is something you should do in Sunnydale. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean... Okay, yes, and one thread that has... They introduced this in the first episode of season two, and we have not really touched on it since, but, like, Principal Snyder and the police chief were, like, talking at the end of the first episode of, or the school attack episode, being like, we gotta cover this up and use, like, the normal story. Mm. So there, like, that And that has not been talked about since. That's been like 6 or 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. But people in Sunnydale know about the demons.
Normies know.
So I think we just need to like dive into the deep end here.
It's kind of, so, I mean, they not the exact same thing, but in the last episode, Ford like already knew Buffy was a Slayer somehow. We didn't really find out how, but like people know things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without spoiling anything, I do think there's also some jokes in later seasons how they're like, yeah, this is just kind of how normal civilians are like, yep, this is how this works now.
Yeah, and which I appreciate. This is so much better of a way to do this kind of thing.
Because it would be insane if everyone was oblivious for however long the show has been on.
And if every single time someone found out, they spent an entire episode strong person being like, oh my god.
They're just like, nope, we gotta move on. We did this before.
But yeah, I guess sort of where I'm going with this thought is like, there seems to be some sort of like organized civilian group in Sunnydale that is like paying attention to all of the demon stuff going on. And I want to know more about that. I feel like they introduced that concept and then dropped it.
And that guy at the morgue is just one of the many pawns.
Yeah, he's like a low level grunt in the Sunnydale operation.
Love that.
Not a doctor, just checks the bodies.
There's a lot of gender stuff to get into in this episode. Very, you know, demon possession. And Igon's a man in Johnny's body. Buffy making jokes at Ethan's expense about which one of them is manly. It's all sorts of various people's past and different names coming back to haunt them.
I feel like Xander said something dumb at one point.
And I don't.
I'm trying to remember what it was.
I also can't remember it, but I
remember when he said it, I was like, all right.
Fuck Xander. And that brings us to our segments. but I guess we'll start with Xander Slander since we're sort of there.
Oh my god, I love Xander Slander.
Matt, what was the worst Xander moment of the episode?
You know, I'm trying to remember specific ones because, like, most of it was just things he said. It wasn't, like, a specific, like, super memorable action. Like, I guess the closest would be whatever I was trying to remember what he said before. It was really dumb where I'm like, you idiot, but...
Well, he was talking about whores.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't fun.
Also during this scene, I guess this was more harmless, where Buffy and Willow were talking about anywhere but here, and they're, like, fantasizing, he's like... Someone at the water park. I don't know the name of the person that he's fantasizing about. Some celebrity.
Amy Yip,
yes. And Willow, wait, who did Willow say? Willow said
John Cusack.
John Cusack, yes. And Xander said Amy Yip at the water park.
Who did Buffy say?
I didn't write it down.
I don't remember what Buffy, I don't remember the name Buffy said.
Willow wanted ZD. Yes. I know that.
Queen. Mm-hmm. We're all Willow.
Sopranos legend.
Well, the beauty's in the details.
She's so good with that kind of stuff, Buffy. Mike, what was the worst Xander moment of the episode?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a trend over season 2. He's just kind of like, he is bad, but he's not doing awful things like he was in season 1. But I do think there was like a little bit of a... Like, during that same game where they're, like, the anywhere but here, just the way he said, like, I, like, fixate on something and, like, I never change my mind. Like, the way that he was, like, yearning after this celebrity or whatever. And that just reminded me about how he's still probably pining after Buffy. And, like, he makes all of these, like, snide comments anytime she's, like, with Angel or talking to any other guy. And he's fixated on her, and he's a bad friend and didn't do anything to help this episode.
True. He nominally researched, but he didn't. Willow found everything.
Yeah. Of course.
And she had the idea to go get Angel.
And I mean, Buffy had to send Cordelia to kind of do Xander's part of the research too.
Cordelia had to stop Philip from leaving.
Yeah. Basically, Xander did nothing. My definitely worst part of the episode for Xander for me was when he was like, you know what? It's been 12 years of me knowing you. I'm going to punch you in the face, Cordelia. It's like,
But I do think Cordelia would have kicked his ass.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's
and I was
kind of like,
hoping that's where it was going.
This is not called
go.
For.
But I think it's like what I said earlier when we were watching. Xander is like if Chandler Bing was a terrible, horrible teenager.
It's kind of like if Chandler was wearing a sleeveless tee in every episode. Sort of that's the energy, even though Xander doesn't really do that either, but just kind of like got his arms out. Stella kind of thing. moving on, next segment. Biggest slay. Matt, what was the moment of the episode that made you go slay?
Let me think.
We can go if you're...
Yeah, come back to me.
When Cordelia kicked slash tripped Ethan on his way out, I'm taking the low-hanging fruit here. That was the biggest slay. That was amazing. She's got some great action star moments in her. Has she ever been in an action movie? What's she been doing?
Yes, but in a lot of them... Right.
She's in The Expendables 2 or something.
Really?
She's in the first one, I think. But it's not a big role. It's just she's only in, like, I think a handful of scenes, and she's nowhere near any action, which... I remember watching The Expendables being like, I didn't really like this movie. I also snuck in to see it. But I'm watching it, and then
you want
take that out? Take that out, please. Cut that out. But I remember I got so excited seeing her because first time I'm like, no. Like, I said it out loud in the theater. I almost just yelled, Cordelia.
Yeah, I'm ready for her to be given a stake. I'm ready for her to be sort of like dusting vampires.
Yeah.
She's getting closer every episode. Maybe in this mid-season finale.
She bit one in the season one finale, so maybe she'll be staking.
Maybe she'll be bit in.
If Cordelia was a vampire?
That would be sly.
Break my friggin' heart, why don't you?
I know, but we haven't really had a major character. We haven't seen a new vampire, really.
No,
we had Jesse turn into a vampire in the very first episode, but he died.
So most of it just been like henchmen.
We had the Anointed One. You're so rude to the Anointed One.
For the Anointed One.
Well, I'm allowed to be rude to him.
Same, I am too. I don't like that guy.
My brother and I used to call each other the Anointed
One. My biggest slay, my favorite moment for sure, is the drinking moment. Like, it's so tonally so strange for the episode and just the universe in general. They're just like, alcohol. Like, even though they're like, the people in the scene are like 4 16-year-olds and Jenny Calendar. And it's just kind of like they're all freaking out that someone would drink. It just really made me laugh.
Okay, I thought of one.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, in my heart of hearts, I'm sure my actual moment was Mike's moment, because I just popped big when that happened. But another scene that I remember, and I just really love, and it's just really right up my alley, is when Jenny, who was possessed by Igon, escapes Giles' house and jumps and breaks through the window, and it's the shot's in slow motion. I, like, clapped when that happened.
Thank you for bringing this up. I meant to talk about it earlier. I feel like this season specifically, and maybe just the show as a whole, we'll find out, they're very big on letting the villain escape so that they can come back later. They give scenes where, like, the villain and Buffy talk for a while, and then the villain, like, runs away. It's just like... to go move on, and like Buffy's like, well, because of the plot, I have to let them leave.
When I was really young, I used to watch old reruns of the very, very old Justice League cartoon from the ones that came out when we were all kids, but like the old one where like the animation static and they're like, ah. But at the end of every episode, the Justice League would always capture the Legion of Doom, and then Lex Luthor would press a button and they'd be gone. And I would be like, Buffy follows that same kind of, formula sometimes. And so, you know what? It's a classic for a reason.
It's good. Like, I'm making fun of it a little bit, but I do like the concept of it, because, like, we want our hero and our villain to be able to talk to each other, but we also don't want them to have to wait until the end of the episode for that to happen. So, like, the villain has to escape so that Buffy can, like, take this information back to the team and they can go back again to, like, talk to the villain again later.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure, thinking now, subconsciously, that's probably why I chose that moment. But also, I just really loved the way it looked.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And I didn't think that was going to happen.
Angel did a similar move in this episode, over the car. Oh, yeah. He like left on a man. That's what demons do. They leap arms outstretched.
I also love that all demons also know combat. Hand-to-hand combat is, it's one of the, what a great little...
Another really good combat moment in this episode, when Buffy like came to Giles' house and like flip kicked, or like did like a big kick up into the air at Jenny's face.
Yes.
It's just very, very good. Acrobatic. That's the calisthenics. Moving on, fashion moment. Matt, did you notice any fashion moments you want to spotlight in the episode?
Fashion moments. I mean, I've mentioned this before. I think I was more distracted by the art of the episode.
Aesthetics,
fashion,
great.
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking back, Cordelia did look great.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love those pearls that Deidre was wearing at the beginning. It is one of the first things I noticed when the episode started. But I gotta also just want to shout out the Giles's lamps again, which were incredible. And it looked like, you know, there was going to be a pool table right next to one of them. It was like one of those, like, what are those, stained glasses kind of lamps?
It was very cool. It just looked like Giles. Like, if a lamp could be Giles, it was those two lamps in his house.
Like, we'd be upset if those lamps weren't in his house.
Yeah. We'd be like, this doesn't look like Giles' house. Mike, do you have a fashion moment?
Yeah, this episode was awesome with, like, so many great outfits. Especially since season two has been kind of lacking in that. As Matt mentioned, Cordelia looked incredible on her Saturday school day with the white top and, like, her slim-fitting black pants, that, like, tiny silver belt. It was great. Let's see what else was great in this. Can I?
Yeah, as many as you want.
Giles's pajamas in the opening when he, like, woke up from his nightmare thinking about the demon. It was just a very Giles outfit. It was, like, the striped full set pajamas.
I loved all the nightmares in this episode, too. They were, like, rock and roll, drug-infused 80s or maybe 70s.
Made me really wish we saw a little bit more of that scene.
I would take a demon drug if that's what it looked like.
I'd love it if we got, like, a flashback scene of... This could have been another good thing. If we saw, like, all five of them still alive, instead of Giles just being, like, one of them died. Like, what if we kind of saw that? Sort of show, don't tell is something I'd suggest.
It didn't have to be, like a 10-minute long scene, but I would have liked to see more of just, like, just showing what happened.
And then I've done this a few times in the show's run, an anti-fashion moment. Mm-hmm. I hate to do it to Buffy again after just doing it, but that, like, leaf print shirt she had, I really didn't like it. It was, like, a little too busy. All of the leaves were different. I think if they wanted it to work, they should have just picked one leaf and had that be the print on the shirt rather than, like, 10 different types of leaves all over
the shirt. Even that probably wouldn't have been a guarantee.
Probably not, but it would have been better.
For me, fashion moment wise, I have a couple. In the first scene, we see Buffy, or not the calisthenics scene, but she looked good in her acrobatic stuff too. But the next day at school, she's wearing, like, a tank top and a white skirt, and she looked really good in. Secondly, I made a note of Cordelia looking incredible. I said, Cordelia, hair and shirt, slay. And then I felt like Xander had a really nice sweater in this episode, too.
Was that a sweater, or was that a...
It looked like a sweater,
I thought there was, like, a big zipper, though. I thought it was, like, a tracksuit for a second.
Oh, well, if there's a... If it's a...
No, oh, wait, but there was a sweater that, like, he wore that later.
Xander's, like, Saturday school sweater he looked good in. But if there's a zipper, I'm rescinding.
I might be thinking of a different thing he wore maybe later in the show. I don't remember.
Who knows?
Exactly. Look, we all agree. Cordelia looked incredible.
Period. Final segment.
Sorry, since you didn't take it, I do want to throw in one more little costume art direction thing. The final showdown when Jenny as demon shows up at Giles or at Ethan's store. You see her, like, silhouetted in the door frame, and, like, her green eyes are casting off that light. She just looked so amazing in that scene.
I agree.
The makeup for the demon in this episode was really, really good.
Yeah, especially when when Jenny shows up in that scene, and you see, like, what the makeup fully formed looks like. I thought it looked great. And that's part of the fun of the show, too, is seeing what they do with the makeup on some creatures.
Because, like, I feel like we haven't really had a good demon.
No. And the vampires don't count, because they all look ugly.
I feel like, I don't remember the first... two seasons, I could be wrong, it's been so long since I've seen the show, but I remember the first season not being, like, as far as, like, makeup on certain creatures, not being really interesting, because, like you said, the vampires all look like that, and, like, I wonder if that was, like, by design, or you're like, well, you're not supposed to really, like, they're all, like, a lot of them are interchangeable kind of goons, so they all have that kind of ugly, quick, it doesn't feel like that takes too long to put it on.
This was the first time they got, like, really creative with it, I felt like. Because even, like, the closest thing that I'm thinking of is when they did, like, the Frankenstein guy. And even that was just kind of, like, sewn up on the face. Yeah. It wasn't even that cool. And otherwise, yeah, it's been vampires. And this was the first time they, like, went for it, I felt
yeah,
like.
Yeah, they really were like, oh, we're going to go a little more all out with this. And honestly, it looked great. Loved it.
Period. Final segment, she slayed. Matt, who was your favorite character of the episode?
Favorite character of the episode? Ooh. You know what? I'm going to give it to Miss Calendar.
Yes.
I really liked her performance in this episode, but also, like, she really goes through it in yeah. this one. She kind of runs, like, the gamut of, like, an arc and, like, then getting possessed mm-hmm. and slaying it while possessed, too. I my MVP, I got to go with Jenny Calendar for this one.
Completely agreed. Like, she really got to do so many different moods and tones, like the opening sexy scene, yeah. like getting demon possessed, and she's like injured and hurt, and then she's gets to play the demon for several scenes, and then she gets to be like all like traumatized at the end. Like she did so many different things in this episode. Hard not to give it to her.
Yeah, she slayed.
So true.
Yeah. But I am going to give my favorite character to Ethan. Just Whoa. Because I feel like we're not going to get so many opportunities to choose Ethan as our favorite mm-hmm. character. And he was just like very messy the entire episode. Didn't seem to like he knew what he wanted to get done. He was like, I need to get rid of this tattoo and I need to offer up someone else in my place. And he achieved his goals.
And he escaped.
And he escaped. Yeah. So kudos to Ethan.
Do you think we'll be seeing him again?
I at this point, we better.
Because last time he was here, you were like, never see this guy again.
I know. And if I'm hoisted by my own petard here and we never see Ethan again, that'll be sad. But I'm thinking he's still got that lease for the rest of the month in Sunnydale.
And who knows how many episodes that covers.
What if every episode of Buffy was a single day? Like, or I guess that's a single hour for 24, but maybe this could be...
Oh my god. This is just making me think of another article I read. I love reading articles about celebrities talking about what they do. There was something not that long ago where Jon Favreau straight up says, oh, well, when you're watching The Mandalorian, it's supposed to be years between some episodes. And I'm like, I'm sorry, oh. What? So how old is Grogu?
Well, he's like 100 when they find
But how
him.
Old now?
I don't know.
Like 100. And how old is everyone else on that friggin' show? But no, I when I was watching TV, the basics are, especially for like a network drama, I was like, okay, this is either the following week, or mm-hmm. maybe this is the following several days.
Yes. But if there's a season break, then it's the summer yes. It was summertime and now we're back in school.
Isn't the beginning of the second season then after summer break? Yeah. They even say it at the yeah. beginning, right?
Unless you're the OC season one and your first 8 episodes are summer break.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's true.
Okay, I think that's everything. Next episode, it's called What's My Line Part 1. Mike, do you have any predictions for what we're going to see?
Improv. Isn't that... That's an improv show, right?
Whose line?
Whose line is it anyway?
Yeah. The amount of times I've said in an improv set, what's my line?
yeah, it's going to be an improv-based... two episode mid-season finale based on an improv show.
Yeah, it's kind of like... The script for the mid-season finale is like a script for Curb, where they have like a general sketch of what the scene's going to look like, and they just have the actors improvise the lines.
And you know, the best thing about those episodes from what I remember is none of the points mattered.
Except the point of the stake.
Hey!
Ooh.
Wow, can't get better than that.
I would love to do a drum snare if I could.
But
Matt, thank you so much for being here. Do you have anything to plug?
Oh, let's see. I guess I'm on some of the social medias for now. I'm on the TikTok. The handle is @MattRainIsOld. I am waiting for them to kick me off when they find out how old I am. I'm on Twitter @Matt_Rain. I get really crazy with the handles, you know? And then on Instagram, I'm @ButI'mMattRain. So there's, if you want wow. to say there's a little bit of an arc, you could start that the Twitter was first, and then there was the Instagram, and then there was the TikTok one. I think that's the same, it's like a very Sammy Fableman kind of journey, if you think about it.
Wow, now I'm on board. Mike, how about you?
We're at Buffy Boyfriends on Instagram, and we're at Buffy Boyfriends on Twitter, and I think that's all I want to plug. Go see Sam's improv show next weekend.
Ooh, thank you.
Watch Buffy season 2, mid-season finale part 1 about the improv show, and then go see Sam's improv show.
If you're listening to this the Thursday, Friday, or Saturday it comes out, I have a show at the Magnet Theater at 4:30 on Saturday the 18th of March, and you can come see it for $5. I'm hilarious, and so are my classmates. You can also look at my other podcast, Bitter Jurors Podcast. By the time this comes out, we will have released the season 44 episode 2 recap with Kellen from Survivor Ghost Island. And you can read my newsletter, Do You Want to Hang Out, talking about stuff I want to do with you specifically in New York City. And you can follow me at Sam Standish everywhere.
Slay.
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 I mean, I don't know how we're going to get better than that. I think we can end it there.
I think that's the best plug I've ever done.
A great first draft.
Period. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.